and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. It is Friday. Yes, we can be excited about that. If there's nothing else to be excited about, just consider the weekend is upon us. Welcome. The phone number, if you want to be a part of the program this morning, is, what is it? I don't know. Yes, I know. It's 877-97-ERIC. 877-973-7425. You know, so I'm in this situation as well, like so many of you, of what day of the week is it? Now, I keep it on my computer, so I kind of know. But I've gotten to this point, like yesterday, I got off the air at 6. Did my chicken on the rec tech, had my Mrs. Griffin's barbecue sauce, and we had a great supper. You know, so we decided not to slather on the Mrs. Griffin's in the grill. Part of it was just, I didn't want to get extra stuff in the grill. But we used it as a dipping sauce, and it was really good. So this wasn't actually an ad for Mrs. Griffin's, just I actually do use it. You should go get it as well. But I finished supper and told my wife, since the mess was mine in the kitchen, I would clean up and did the dishes, took the trash out. Yes, I did the dishes. I took the trash out. And then it dawned on me, wait a second, what day is it? What day is trash? When do I have to roll the trash can down? And I realized it was actually Thursday. I needed to roll the trash down because our trash collection in our neighborhood is on a Friday. And I didn't realize no one else in the neighborhood that I recall had rolled their trash can. And usually I'm one of the last. So I was very proud of myself. And then the neighbor came outside and saw me and said, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I saw you do that. I totally forgot today was the day we got to do that. Everybody's just losing track of time still. I'll tell you something else that's happening that's very crazy out there. Remember, if you will recall, if you're a reasonable person, at the beginning of this pandemic, there were a lot of truthers on the right when it came to the global pandemic. And I'm that sounds disparaging, and part of it is an aggravation, but you know the people, and you may be one of the people that the data was overstated, the deaths are overstated, the cases are overstated. I can't tell you the number of people that I have seen who have said, oh, you know, they're overcounting the deaths. You die of a gunshot wound and you had COVID-19. They're saying you died of COVID-19. And certainly there are isolated cases, but anecdote is not data. You gotta dismiss thousands of cases to say this is just the flu. I mean, the data is not on the side of the people saying this is no big deal. And so they got to obfuscate. They got to twist the truth. They're very much like the devil quoting scripture to Jesus. Yeah. And if that insults you, well, you're insulted. There's nothing I can do about it. But here's the thing. As we're turning the corner in Georgia, there actually is a truther movement building on the left that they're lying about the data, that Brian Kemp is lying about the data. They can't admit that they were wrong. In the same way, there are people on the right who will never admit they were wrong. There will be people who, in fact, I know a lot of you because I encounter you at the grocery store, will not admit that maybe we did need to shelter in place. And I disagree with you, but I'm glad to have the argument with you. We can have the argument with you because we did shelter in place, and so the virus did not spread. And I think it was the right thing to do. And I think the governor has been proven right in waiting to close and then in reopening when people told him not to. And what is remarkable to me is the number of people on the left now who are coming out saying, oh, wait, not so fast, not so fast. What they're doing is they're mischaracterizing the data. They're rigging the data. They're making it look better than it actually is. We're confused by the data. I see the Georgia STEM Facebook account is out saying we're skeptical. We don't really know that we believe it. Let me read you the gobbledygook from the Georgia STEM account, which has a wide following, wide enough that a bunch of people have sent it to me. Here we go. The total COVID cases is no longer the total. For example, if the cases increased 500 in 24 hours, we have no idea what that means. If we count back 21 days and there were 1,500 new cases that day, 500 cases in a day is actually 2,000 new cases. 2,000 minus 1,500 deleted because of the 21-day roll-off equals a new increase of 500. We're so frustrated with the data. But here's the problem is we're doing the 21-day roll-off, one, because of an infectious rates. You're not going to be spreading. You're tested positive. 21 days later, you roll off. It's because you're no longer contagious. You no longer have the case, and we're not doing testing for recovery, so this is a way to compensate for it. But also, they're trying to show gating criteria. You know, the state of Georgia was attacked because of the way it was displaying its data in a daily chart, daily new cases, and not doing it day by day and where the cases fell. And so they updated the chart. They wanted to give you an overabundance of information. So they got attacked for giving you an overabundance of information. And now they're being attacked because they're giving you that information, but they're not connecting the dots. So there's a 7-day rolling average. And they were connecting the dots and you could see the fall off. And now they're not connecting the dots. So you can still see the dots, the daily cases as they're reported, but you can't see the lines because those lines will change. You know, as the daily new cases come in, those numbers adjust. And so they don't want to paint a false picture. And now they're being attacked for that. What's really happening here is the left doubling down. You know, Ron Fornier, I mentioned him yesterday. I know the guy. I know he means well. I know he's really angry about the state of the country. I know he is of the left and always has been, even when he was the Washington bureau chief for the Associated Press. You can be on the left and you can mean well, but on and on it goes. And last night he said, you know, he apologizes for saying Brian Kemp would have blood on his hands. And then he pointed out all the stuff that President Trump said that was wrong, and people blew him up for that. You could say it was an ungracious apology. We do need to acknowledge a lot of people on all sides have been wrong. But at least he came out and said he's glad he was wrong. There are a lot of people out there who don't even want to admit they were wrong. There are a lot of people out there who say, oh, well, Brian Kemp is just lying about the data now. Now, remember, these are the people who were saying that people on the right were lying about the data. And the difference is that the media would attack anyone on the right who questioned the data. The media will not attack anyone on the left questioning the data because so many people in the media actually are institutionally, philosophically opposed to reopening right now. You know, I can't play you. Most of you have probably seen Dave Portnoy's video. Now, Dave Portnoy, he is the founder of Barstool Sports. So there was a website that took off called Deadspin that was a big sports site. And Deadspin got polluted by a bunch of social justice warriors. And everything had to involve politics. And so Barstool Sports comes along, and it's about the sports. Some people would derisively call it bro sports. It's about sports, the love of the game, the nonsense that goes on, ridiculing the people who want to bring politics in it. Dave Portnoy went on a tirade the other day about when did flattening the curve become getting rid of the virus altogether? We were all told to shelter in place to flatten the curve. We flattened the curve, and now they move the goalposts. Say, no, we flattened the curve, but we got to flatten it. I can't play you his audio because it was so profanity-laced. It would be beep, 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 beep the whole way through. But he made a good point, and now the media is attacking him. They're attacking him as some sort of truther. Why? Because he's pointing out all of the stories from the press over the last couple of months that said shelter in place, flatten the curve, we can go about our business. Well, we sheltered in place, we flattened the curve, we should go about our business now. Should we wear masks in public? Yeah, we probably should wear masks in public. Some states are mandating it. This state is not mandating it, just encouraging it. But it's remarkable to see the number of people out there who they're scared to death. And they're on the left now. They're not on the right. It's not people on the right now lying about the data. It's people on the left saying, oh, Brian Kemp must be lying about the data. It can't really be that good in Georgia. The scientists say, you know, Georgia's got an army of scientists. It's led by one of the top epidemiologists in the country. Her name is Dr. Kathleen Toomey. Are they saying that she, a woman who has worked for Democrats and Republicans, is lying? You notice it's like how the left turns on Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci. When Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci come out and say, yeah, actually, it is possible we could get a vaccine. And yeah, actually, it is possible we could find ways to reopen the country slowly. The left attacks them for daring to suggest it. It really is becoming political and they don't want to admit it. And you get attacked for pointing it out. But it really is becoming a political situation where on the left, they want the entire country closed off, walled off and doors locked. So no one could come outside until Joe Biden is president. And then they'll let you outside once they've ruined the economy to beat Donald Trump. I mean, y'all, it is not a coincidence that for months the Democrats were trying to talk down the economy to convince you it wasn't as good as it seemed and weren't having any success, and the president's job approval numbers were going up. We have a global pandemic. The markets crash. The data crashes. The unemployment skyrockets. Employment crashes. All of these bad things happen to the economy, and now they're like, we can't reopen the economy anytime soon. We have to leave people inside. we're going to kill people. People are going to die. What they really mean is if Donald Trump is reelected, people will die. They don't want to actually say that part. That's the quiet part. Some of them will eventually say it out loud. They always do. But that's what this is about. We can't reopen those southern state economies. No way. We can't give them a competitive advantage over the states that screwed this up, like Illinois and New York. No, we can't let the South resume. How could we let the former Confederate Hicks and Rubes do better than us? It's amazing to me. I just went like falsetto. It is amazing to me. How much the news media is so focused on New York City. I didn't get a chance to play this clip yesterday. Let me fly in this clip. Cuomo on Cuomo love.
How do they meet the factual threshold when you are strapped for cash and unable to test instill any real comprehensive way anywhere in your state?
Yeah, well, what you said is just not a fact. If it were a fact, you'd be right, but it's not a fact.
Where is it wrong?
We have different regions in this. I'm going to explain if you let me finish. We have 10 regions in this state, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very different across the state. We have the worst cases in New York City, the worst in the United States, worst in some countries. We mm-hmm. have regions upstate
right.
that are more like rural America, where the numbers are dramatically different. So we do it region by region, and every region must hit numerical thresholds. The CDC put out preliminary guidance. They're supposed to be doing follow-up detailed guidance. We're still waiting for that. But the preliminary guidance of the CDC, and that's what Dr. Fauci goes back to, decline of cases for 14 days, surge capacity in hospitals, surge capacity in ICU units, enough PPE equipment, tracing and testing. That operation has to be in place.
Can you test enough?
Notice how Chris Cuomo wanted to phrase it sympathetically to his brother, the governor of New York. Here, you're strapped for cash. Hey, notice the bailout that New York City wants. But you know what? Chris Cuomo has never asked his brother. He's never asked his brother about all the deaths in nursing homes. He's never asked his brother about his failures. He's never wanted to hold his brother accountable in a way he wants to hold Donald Trump accountable. And the whole media is like this. They've built up Andrew Cuomo as some sort of hero, as a foil to Donald Trump. They are willfully making heroes on the left, and when the data starts to turn against them, they're starting to deny the data. They've become data truthers on the left. They cannot admit that maybe they were wrong. They wanted everyone on the right to admit they were wrong. When do they admit that they were wrong on stuff? You know, David Brooks is causing outrage today in the New York Times. Why? Well, let me read you part of David Brooks's column in the New York Times. Let me find the relevant part. Where's the relevant part? Yes, here we go. In real life, people are less dogmatic and more uncertain, just trying to feel their way toward a way forward. They're seeking the right balance between safety and normalcy. They're not waiting for politicians to tell them what to do. People locked themselves down before the governors acted, and they're staying home even when governors have opened up. The important decisions are not being made in state houses. They're being made at the family and community level as networks of people try to figure out what to do based on their particular local context. Online, humility is rare. People trained in the art of rigid ideology aren't doing well with a disease that is so mysterious and seemingly random. I'm worried that the polarization industry's false narrative of division and conflict will turn self-fulfilling. But so far, as a country, we are handling and in one, we are hanging in with one another. And we're in the process of discovery. We're slowly learning the strange features of this disease, slowly improvising what will be a wide variety of local ways forward. Endurance is not static. It's slowly learning, slowly adjusting. The pandemic has revealed the rot in many of our political dogmas and institutions, and also a greater humility, a deeper compassion in the face of suffering, and a hidden solidarity, which I, at least, did not know was there. And he writes this, and this is what has them furious with David Brooks today. When the governors of Georgia and Florida opened up a bit, many commentators on the left treated them as if they were serial killers, as if what they were doing was an obvious atrocity. In truth, the people of Georgia and Florida are not worse off than before, and there's evidence they're actually better off. at least so far. It is striking to see the people on the left who said Brian Kemp had blood on his hands now say, well, he's still got blood on his hands. We just have to wait another week to see it. Will they ever admit they were wrong? So many members of the media are in that camp. Will they ever admit they were wrong? They demand that people on the right be held accountable. They demand that people on the right admit responsibility, admit they were wrong, admit the data was right. Will they ever admit they were wrong? You know the most remarkable data point, and you don't need to believe me. I want you to see it for yourself. I want you, and look, I'm very serious. If you're listening to me right now, I am deadly serious. I want you to do this. I want you to pull out your cell phone and text the word data to 33777. I'm not asking for your email address. I'm not charging you for it. I want you to text data to 33777. That's the phone number. The phone number is 33777. Text the word data. And I'm going to send you back a link, and one of them will say the IHME data. And I want you to click on it and see it for yourself. What did the experts tell us? As testing spiked, so too would the number of daily cases. We would see an increase in daily cases as the number of daily testing went up because the virus was embedded in communities. And when we tested more people, we would see Georgia has gone from the bottom quarter of the nation per capita in testing to the top 10. And you can see it. Click on that IHME link. I see some of you texting through right now. Text data to 33777. That second link to the IHME model. Click it and look at that line. You've got this blue line that skyrockets the number of daily tests being performed in Georgia. And all of the experts said that would mean we would also see a corresponding increase in the number of daily tests or the number of daily new infections. And what you actually see is that line is flat. Even though testing has gone up, the daily infection rate has not. It stayed flat. Turns out the experts didn't get that right. They should admit it.
I really do like his opinion on things.
Eric Erickson, the information you need and the truth you demand.
He tells it like it is.
Live every weekday.
Now, if you texted the word data to 33777, you want to look at the second chart. The first chart is on social distancing. And the second chart says daily infections and testing. This is the thing that's remarkable to me. Now, maybe we will see that increase. Notice that it lags by about 5 days, and maybe we'll see an increase here. But what is remarkable to me is that starting on April 16th, there's a dramatic spike in the number of daily tests. And in theory, and in fact, we've seen this, by the way, I should say we have seen this in most places. As the number of tests go up, the number of confirmed cases go up. And we did see a little bit of this in Georgia. We saw a little bit of this. Remember there were that one day we saw daily 1,200 new cases. Well, that had a lot to do with the daily testing. But, you know, the IHME model that you're looking at there with that graph sorts those daily infections into the date of the actual infection, not the date of the test. And what's remarkable is that the number of tests, you can see it for yourself. Again, text data to 33777. It's free. You don't pay anything other than if you're charged from your cell phone company to send a text. I'm just going to email you back the link and you click the second one, the IHME one, and you can see the graph for yourself. You don't have to take my word for this stuff. And look at this. The number of daily tests has just skyrocketed to we are over 10,000 daily tests on May 12th in Georgia, and the number of daily new confirmed infections is flat. Now, it's still in the 700s a day. And if one person can infect three people, that's still scary. And we do know that bit of data is confirmed. One person can infect three people, which is why so many people should still stay home and why people who go out and about should wear a mask and wash your hands and all that and avoid crowds, because we're still getting over 700 daily new infections. And if everybody goes out and about in the way it was and the way we were, we could again overwhelm things. But all of the experts said everywhere that if we saw an increase in tests, we would see an increase in cases. And that's not what we're seeing in Georgia. Other places are. It's not that the experts are wrong. It's just that they were making broad brush data suggestions, and it doesn't actually apply here in Georgia, at least right now. And we should actually recognize this as good news and also recognize that a lot of what we heard isn't necessarily applicable per your state or per your region, but in general, and that's a big difference. By the way, I really didn't. Y'all think I'm joking. Number one topic today in the show notes, Joe Biden and the Trump campaign. We will get there. I rearranged things. But a buddy of mine sent me this info, and I've had it in my show notes to get to for a couple of days. Let me read this to you real quick. This is from the Daily Signal at the Heritage Foundation. The 30 counties with the most COVID-19 cases, for example, account for 48% of all the cases in the United States and 55% of all deaths, 3 to 4 times greater than their 15% share of the U.S. population. That is just 1% of all counties representing 15% of the United States population are responsible for almost half of the country's COVID-19 cases and more than half the deaths. Yeah, you're responsible for almost half of the cases and more than half of the deaths. Of those 30 counties, that is, there are 30 counties that are responsible for almost half of the country's COVID-19 cases and more than half of the deaths. 24 are in the Northeast Corridor between Philadelphia and Boston, the passageway served as a commuter railway system that runs through Manhattan. Overall, only 10% of all counties contain 95% of all COVID-19 cases, even though they account for only 64% of the population. Just as important, 50% of all counties with 10% of the U.S. population have zero COVID-19 deaths as of May 11th. In fact, 63% of all counties have no more than one COVID-19 death each. So while 1% of counties, mostly in the Northeast, have more than half of all COVID-19 deaths in the U.S., 63% of counties have no more than one death each. And both groups represent the same share of the U.S. population. Let me read that again, because I can hear those of you in Villa Rica screaming that I have said it too fast. While 1% of the counties, mostly in the Northeast, that is 30 counties, have more than half of COVID-19 deaths in the United States, 63% of counties have no more than one COVID-19 death each. And both groups represent the same share of U.S. population. Really puts it in perspective. It really is remarkable how things are going. Now, the Heritage Foundation actually has a very cool COVID-19 tracker that they've put together where you can see the trends. And you can go county by county and see where things are getting better. So I'm in Bibb County, for example. In Bibb County, there's this tracker says, you know, the data is a couple of days behind. But it says that there's a 0.07 increase in COVID-19 cases in Georgia. In Henry County, it's a 0.14 county decline. Let's see, what else is there? In Habersham County, it says it's declining. Floyd County, it says there's no change in trend, which is actually good given the data in Floyd County. What about Clark County? In Clark County, we got a 0.29 increase, but it's still not significant. We're talking 4 cases. I was going to save this for later in the show, but here's something that I think is worth commenting on right now. There's a trend I'm seeing across the board in the United States, respective of your political ideology, on the left and the right. A whole lot of people are kind of incapable these days of taking the good news. You know, I do this too. If something really good is happening, I expect something bad to happen any moment. You know, yeah, I'm going to go with Bono. You know Bono from U2. Bono from U2 is a committed Christian. And Bono was asked one time about his faith. And he says he's so grateful for Jesus because with Jesus, you have grace instead of karma. And the reporter asked him what he meant by that. And Bono said that, I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have this in front of me. This is an interview from a few years ago, but he said, you know, most of the world believes you do good things, you get good things. You do bad things, you get bad things. And with Jesus, you do bad things, and he spares you from the things you deserve. And more often than not, he gives you the things you don't deserve. It's the difference between grace and mercy. He said, with karma, everybody who does something good knows they've done something bad, and so you spend your entire life waiting for the bad thing to come back at you. And with Jesus, you don't have to worry about that. It was actually a very profound thing. And you know, we all get that in our thinking. I do that. And in fact, my staff around me sometimes have to admonish me for that. The pastors who are friends of mine have to, because I get into that thinking that, man, things are going so good, I'm just waiting for the bottom to fall out. And, you know, one of the interesting things here now in this country is that the bottom has fallen out, people. I don't know if you've seen the unemployment numbers, but they've tanked. And you know what? You know what's remarkable? Is there's actually some good news out there, too. There's going to keep being bad news. We're going to keep hearing about our favorite local restaurant closing, local business closing, and on it goes. But you know what? You know what? It's okay. There's good news out there, and we should appreciate it. What is the good news of which you speak, Erickson? Well, the state is reopening, and the virus isn't spreading. The daily rates continue to decline. The number of jobless claims, it's gone up. It's gone up massively in just a month, but it's leveling off. Fewer claims this week than last week. Still claims, but fewer than last week. That's a good sign. People's families are coming together. And, you know, let's dwell on this David Brooks column for just a moment. You're coming together with your community and your family and your friends. You're not waiting for Uncle Sam to make the decision for you. You're not waiting for your governor to make the decision for you. Things are going to be okay. Things are going to be okay. You know, I have been dwelling. Man, I am totally off script now. Not that I have a script, mind you, but I just have an outline of things I was going to go to. I wasn't even going to get to this. But now I am. You're here. You're my captured audience. You got to suck it up with me. There's no other radio station out there anyway. I have had in my head, and I can't remember for how long I have had this in my head, and I have had it in my head, and it won't go away, and it comes back all of the time. I can't get it out of my – and I finally sat down this morning because I woke up, and I thought, you know what? I'm gonna write about this. There's been a sermon dwelling up in me. So let me go on a personal side here. I realize you're here for the news. You're not here for me. But let's dwell for a personal side a moment. I started going to seminary a number of years ago, largely because I started talking about cultural and faith stuff on the radio and figured I needed it. And I at one point really had it in my head that, you know what, at some point, the only place I'm going to be able to be safe for employment, because, you know, I have strongly held opinions on culture these days, and a lot of it is against the prevailing winds in culture. Like, I'm one of those people who believes marriage is between a man and a woman. I'm one of those people who believes when the Bible says something's a sin, it's a sin. And you're not actually born that way by God. And that's going to get me into trouble, I know. And I just started thinking, you know, maybe I need to go to seminary, not just because I was being invited to preach and it felt weird to be invited to preach. And then I realized, you know, I kind of pulpit 5 days a week. I got a pulpit and I don't want to lead people astray. And then I started thinking, you know, I really do like preaching. And it's been dawning, like, I haven't been able to do it in the last 6 months. And I want to get back to it, but I don't have the time. I do 3 hours in the morning of radio, 2 hours in the evening. I don't have time for seminary right now, and I desperately need it. It's more a need than a want. I need the distraction of it. But then part of me is also thinking I shouldn't do it for a while. And if we can use the show, y'all can be my therapist this morning. I'll be honest with you. One of the reasons I decided I shouldn't do it is because I do like to preach on Sundays, and I've only done it a few times. And I'm realizing more and more it's not something that I can do because I'm I'm probably too flawed in my social media presence and the bombast that I sometimes say on radio. And there are a lot of churches who would want that, and I wouldn't want to be in those churches. I don't want to go to a church that identifies with a political party. I want to go to a church that identifies with Jesus. And I just realized, you know, come to terms with the fact that you're a preacher 5 days a week. And you're not always talking theology, but your worldview is woven into what you say. And along the ways, I'm trying to come to terms with that. But also, I cannot tell you guys, I can't remember the last time that I went a week without thinking about 2 Kings 6. Now, most of you will not know 2 Kings 6. Well, you remember the story in the Bible where Elisha and his servant are in a house, and the king of Syria has surrounded the house. And the servant wakes up, and he goes outside, and he sees an army with horses and chariots all surrounding the place. And he runs inside, and he says, "Master, what shall we do?" And Elisha says, "Don't be afraid." And he says, "There are more with us than there are with them." And he says, "Lord, open his eyes." And the servant's eyes are open, and he sees the army, the angel army surrounding the Syrians. And there are way more of them than there are of the Syrians. And Elisha doesn't strike them down. He strikes them blind, and he leads them to the king of Israel. And the king of Israel says, "Do you want me to kill him?" And Elisha says, "No." And he opens the Syrians' eyes, and they realize there they are before the king of Israel. And he tells the king of Israel, "Feed them and let them drink and send them back to Syria." What are you, and I've had this in my head for a year now. And I finally just got up this morning, and I got in front of my keyboard and just started typing. It was not an organized sermon. But I got to tell you, I think one of the reasons it's there and one of the reasons I've been dwelling on it is because I'm seeing so many people out there who forget that there are the unseen things. And there are a lot of people out there who have just been driven to despair by this virus. And there are a lot of people who are driven to despair by the economic hard times and the worry. I worry too. You know, we've got three advertisers on this program, Dynamic Money and First Liberty and Mrs. Griffin's, and we need more. We are our own syndicator. We are our own ad sales. We don't have an ad person. We don't have a syndicator person. We're not with a syndicator. We're doing it all ourselves, and I worry about that. I worry about the show getting picked up. I worry on a daily basis, and I find myself often just praying, "God, just give me a little bit of encouragement to get through the day or get through the week," and it's amazing how often he answers. There are so many people who are driven to despair and depression over this virus right now, and they can't own the good news. They can't take a win. They only want to take the losses right now because they expect the losses to come. And so when the win comes, they can't take the win. It's very much like the people on the left who see that, you know, Georgia's reopening and the virus is not spiking the way people expected the virus to spike. And they're like, "Well, not yet, not yet. Give it another week, give it another 2 weeks, give it another 3 weeks, give it another 4 weeks, give it another 5 weeks. What about 8 weeks out? We'll all be dead. Just take the win. Be happy." It's amazing how many people can't be happy right now with this stuff. You know, you sometimes you got to force yourself to be happy. Sometimes you got to force yourself. I sometimes wonder, I wrote this morning, I said, you know what? Elisha blinded the Syrians and led them to the king of Israel and then opened their eyes. Now, there's an underlying metaphor there, I think, that I didn't write about. He led them to the king of Israel. You know who the real king of Israel is. He led them there. They opened their eyes and they saw and they ate and they drank and they went home. But man, he blinded them from the fight. And I wonder sometimes if us, and this is why I don't have any hesitation going in this direction as opposed to we'll get into the Biden stuff, we'll get into the Kim stuff, we'll get into the other news, we'll get into the polling, but let's just be distracted for a minute with this. How many of us are so blinded by the news of the day? We need to be blinded to it. We need to have our eyes opened and fixed on something else, on food and drink and company. And it's hard because we're all sheltering in place. I want to go sit at a bar, have a beer with a buddy, and catch up. I want to relax and have a good time with a friend. And I know a lot of you do too. And a lot of us have been driven to just fixate on politics right now and fixate on the other side. And oh my gosh, it's a presidential season. And what does the polling say? And will the Republicans take back the House? Will the Republicans hold the Senate? Will the president keep the White House? Will Joe Biden get elected? What's going to happen in Georgia? What's going to happen in my state? What's going to happen in my city council? What's going to happen in my school board? Politics, 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 and despair. And maybe we just all need to be blinded from that for a minute and focus on sports. We need sports back. I think sports would be a good distraction. I'm okay with the fake audience sounds. Joe Buck was under, he got all sorts of criticism for saying, we're not going to want to play this in an empty stadium without fans or at least the sound of fans. I kind of agree. It's what makes golf so boring. Not to play, to watch it on TV. I mean, I'll watch golf on TV because those shots are amazing, but still, it's completely different from watching a football game or watching a baseball game. Baseball's kind of boring to watch on TV too, if we're honest about it. You got to have a crowd. But man, y'all, some of us, we need to be willing to own the good news. We need to be willing to be encouraged and to be excited by it. The trend lines are good in Georgia. There's no reason to claim a conspiracy theory. Sometimes the good news is the good news. Yes. Is there going to be more bad news? You're absolutely right. There's going to be more bad news. So savor the good news when you can instead of making yourself immune to the good news. And that tends to be, you know, a lot of people in the past, they wanted to make themselves almost shelter themselves from the bad news. And it seems like a lot of people now just want to be sheltered from the good news because, you know, the bottom's going to fall out again. The bottom's going to fall out again. Maybe it will, but you don't know. But you know what? There's a band of army. There's an angel army surrounding you. There's more with us than with them. So savor the win. Appreciate the good news. There are, you don't have to develop a conspiracy theory in your mind to get through it. Deal with reality. Maybe not attribute bad motives to all the people you disagree with. Certainly some have bad motives, but a lot of them you just disagree with. You see the world in different ways, and that's okay. But to attribute conspiracy theory to good news? No. There's good news right now. Things are headed in the right direction. The estate's reopening. People are going back to work. You can go get a margarita to go for the first time in Georgia at your local Mexican joint. Oh, and they made it strong the other night. Enjoy it. Smile a little. There's more with us than against us.
Want to be on the show? Call Eric now at 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425.
Total distraction there, completely out from everything I was going to talk about. You know, I take your phone calls to 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Baseball and football, maybe they'll come back. There are rumors that some colleges and universities may not do college football this year. Some of them, I think, will. I think you'll probably see, at least within like the SEC and the ACC, I wouldn't be surprised if you see most of them get back on the football field. I have a hard time seeing Texas A&M and the Longhorns and UGA and LSU and the like sitting on the sidelines this year. They may not be able to do it with crowds, but I have a hard time thinking that they're going to not have it. But then there are some, like a number of the California colleges and universities are thinking maybe they won't. And some of the northern ones, Oregon and Washington, are thinking they won't. I don't know that anybody really cares about Washington, but I mean, Oregon's got a pretty good football team. But then there's the professional sports too. You know, some baseball players are saying it's just not worth it to them having a bridge season and take a cut in pay. And why are they putting their lives on the line? I don't know. I think they need to think about the image of that. You got people struggling, losing their jobs, sitting at home. You're still going to be paid millions of dollars. And you're like, it ain't worth it to me to make millions. I think that's going to go over badly with some. We need sports. I'm still of the opinion that they should have played the Masters in Augusta at Easter as they intended and just not have people there. I mean, you're not more socially distant than it's just you and your caddy 6 feet away from you on the golf course. I think they could have done it. and would have given us something. I think it's time to get back to it. I think it's time to get back to sports. I just, man, so I got a Braves license plate. I intend to go to more games. I hope to go to more games. I don't know that we'll be allowed to, but I'll pay more attention. You know, I've never been somebody who sets time on a weekend for sports. I do a lot of cooking on the weekend. And so I typically am not in front of my TV watching a game. I'll watch college football games, particularly in the evening. But during the day, I'm doing stuff. I want to be out on Lake Juliet with my kayak or something. But, man, I think I'll be paying attention to it. Now, we all need the distraction. We need something other than this stupid virus to talk about these days. I mean, even the Joe Biden stuff is actually kind of funny to talk about. We got to talk about Joe Biden. I put it off. I was going to start the show with it, and then I got all this conspiracy truth or stuff on the left, but we got to talk about the Biden stuff. You know, he actually came out and said that if you believe Tara Reid, maybe you shouldn't vote for him. He actually said that. I've got the audio. I want to play. Well, I don't have time to play it right now. You're going to have to stick around. This is called a tease, by the way, in the business. It's called a tease. I'm teasing you. You've got to stick around to hear the audio of Joe Biden say, if you believe Tara Reid, I wouldn't vote for myself. They had him with Stacey Abrams on MSNBC last night. She's trying so hard to be the vice president. And man, his staff, they are just lighting her on fire in national publications. They are so tired of the campaign. And it's like MSNBC is trying to make it happen. Maybe Joe will go with her. I don't know. But there are a lot of people out there thinking it's going to be Kamala Harris who's going to be his vice president. When we come back, though, Joe Biden and Stacey Abrams on TV and what he said about Tara Reid, it's actually kind of funny.